Yigal Marcus is a member of Republican Overseas. Yigal, good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Very well. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. The week has been just completely remarkable. For me, the most overwhelming scenes were the ones with Witkoff and Bola. Give me your experience and your impression of how that all went down.
Well, I think it went as a, you know, as a Jew in Israel looking at the situation, you know, we walked in holding our breath, and I think generally speaking we exhaled, because much of what happened during President Trump's trip focused on the economic relations between the two countries. He's coming back with over $1 trillion worth of business deals. That's a pretty good for three days of work. You know, we'll take it.
Yeah, not a bad one at all.
So we exhaled, and we exhaled because, you know, the concerns of, you know, the pundits who don't like Israel or President Trump very much talked about him recognizing a Palestinian state and pressure on Israel. And of course, that went to the wayside. It never happened. And if anything, he has positioned himself to be more influential in trying to get these countries to normalize relations with Israel. And remember that one of the reasons why October 7th happened when it happened is because Israel and the U.S. were on the cusp of finalizing this great agreement, this normalization agreement with Saudi Arabia, and Iran couldn't stand that, and so they ordered the attack. Of course, funded it, did all the training for it, and it really successfully undermined and stopped that process.
Yeah.
Derailed the entire process. So now President Trump comes back in, and he is reestablishing those relationships, becoming that influential figure again to try to bring the sides together. But he's doing it in a way which is not going to pressure Israel. You know, Israel continues to do what it has to do, and that's that of course is very healthy. It puts the negotiating, you know, it's good. It's a really good negotiating position to be in when you give Israel what they have to do the job, and these negotiations happen under fire when it comes to Hamas. So overall, exhale. Amazing that he brought home $1 trillion of business deals. Boeing desperately needed that huge deal from Qatar.
Yeah, that almost when I looked at that, I thought he's pretty much saved Boeing, who really were in significant hardship.
Yes, it's exactly right, and they needed it, and he delivered it, and can't complain with that in an environment of where there's been a lot of economic uncertainty in the U.S. With the trade deals and the tariff policy coming up with $1 trillion, yeah, we'll take it.
Absolutely. What does it mean now in terms of the Israel's position in the area? Because we see, obviously, he has done some sort of a deal with the Houthis. He is getting much closer to Syria, to Saudi Arabia, Qatar. What does that really mean in terms of where Israel stands? To some extent, it's brilliant, and I said this on my show yesterday, because he's isolating Iran more. But is he isolating Israel at the same time?
No, I think what he's doing is he's doing what he needs to do to be able to look the isolationists, which is a relatively small group of people in his cabinet and his trusted advisors. They do exist. And I think what he's doing is he's basically positioning himself to have said, I tried, I did everything in my power to not do the ultimate, the big one being obviously going after the Iranian nuclear power facilities and destroying them. But I think he's exerting every effort to avoid that. Do I think Iran agrees to complete denuclearization and the destruction of their facilities? No way in heck. Never going to happen. And that's okay. But he can try. And so I don't think that him cozying up, so to speak, with these regimes is necessarily a bad thing, as long as he stands forward. He also, you know, there are people talking about his meeting with the new interim president of Syria. But the conditions that he put down to you know, for the removal of the you know, of all the restrictions on that they placed on Syria, are not necessarily things that they can accept. So he tried. He showed the world that he's trying, and mm-hmm. Syria has to make a decision if they're going to go, you know, become a normal country that doesn't support terror, doesn't seek to destroy minorities, or not. And he put the deal in front of them. They can make that choice, but ultimately it's their choice to make. If they reject it, then the consequences for them are going to be bad. So I think he again is doing everything in his power to advance a new Middle East, but he's doing it in a way which could pacify the isolationists. Of course, the vast majority of his base, he knows, are very pro-Israel. They believe in a strong Israel. They want a new Middle East, but a new Middle East that's based on respect, mutual recognition, and, of course, nothing that could endanger the Jewish state. So I think he's brilliantly doing that.
Can we just understand the word isolationists a bit better? Because I think in the 1930s and 40s, whereas it might have meant something different to what it means today. Today, then it meant, as far as I understand, what we would understand from isolationist is you know, leave us alone. We're on the other side of the world. We're not getting involved. Today, isolationist seems to mean in America's interest. Has there been a change in the meaning of that word?
Yeah, I think there has been, actually. It's actually a very good point that you're bringing up. I think isolationist today means that before America comes to the assistance of countries, they have to do everything in their power to help themselves. And I think you see that with the amount of funding that President Trump has required NATO countries to contribute to raise their defense spending as a percentage of their GDP, which we've seen. Look what's happening in Germany, where they're spending, the defense spending is really going through the roof, and necessarily so. And so I think President Trump's position is, look, there are allies. We have strategic interests. We have, you know, obviously national security interests to have a safe and secure Europe, safe and secure Middle East. But first and foremost, every country has to do their max to protect themselves. And then America will be there to assist when needed. And I think you're seeing that with Israel as well. And bring back to your original question about credit for hostages. At the end of the day, what President Trump did was enable Israel to get a hostage back for nothing in return. Remember Gilad Shalit, we gave up 1,000 soldiers. The question is why? And the answer is because he gave Israel everything it needs to defend itself. He removed the restrictions. Israel got thousands and thousands of munitions needed to defend itself. And that puts Israel in a different position in the eyes of Hamas. We are amassed by the border of Hamas. We're ready to go in and to capture if we have to. But what President Trump did was, again, it's not isolationist in the sense of we're not worried about you. It's Israel, him saying, Israel, you do what you have to do to the max, and then we'll be there. And it's the same message he sent to Europe and to NATO, and it's the same message really that he's sending to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia wants American protection, you know, a defense treaty, so to speak, to defend against regimes like that in Iran. And President Trump is saying, you know what, first, build up your military. Make sure you have a strong military. It's going to cost you a lot of money, but you have to do everything in your power first. And then we can talk about a defense treaty and mutual defense.